come here and take your questions instead of taking you through the slide. But because the DG has already prepared the slides, we will let him do that. Thank you.
Over to you, DG. I've heard you speaking about some sprouts of greens being identified or becoming noticeable in some parts of the country. And I look at the color of your it doesn't encourage me.
It is either they turn this color or they disappear.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, no. There are greens, although the ranch that we had had does not seem to
have greens.
Didn't have any greens in it, so not sure where the greens are disappearing to. It looked like SARS took half of the committee with them, but we have got a delegation here from the Treasury. The far left is Marion Vina, who is the head of corporate services. Freeman Lombardo, who is the accountant general, love him or hate him. Ismail Momoniat, who is the head of tax and financial sector policy and international economy before it moved, as we will see it has now moved. And then we have got Andrew Donaldson, who is the head of public finance. And then behind me here, Tembe Gile, you know, and we have Sadim Gomezulu, who is our outgoing chief financial officer. He's been appointed the chief risk officer of the Treasury. And at the back, Soraya Pendi, she is here to make sure that all journalists are kept in check. You have Adir with Zarina, who is also with our parliamentary office. Mineo, I'm sure you were introduced earlier. And at the back there, we have got the director of the Financial Intelligence Center. He is here to do his pre-exam.
I did not introduce Mineo because I didn't notice he was here.
Okay. We'll go quick through the presentation. It is shorter than the report. This report is based on the strategic plan, Chair, that was approved by the previous committee chaired by your predecessor. Basically, the aim and the strategic focus areas of the Treasury, the National Treasury draws its mandate from Chapter 2 of the Public Finance Management Act, which is based on Chapter 13 of the Constitution. And we are responsible for coordinating macroeconomic policy. Our objectives are to advance economic growth and income distribution, prepare a sound and sustainable national budget and equitable division of resources, and strive to equitably and efficiently raise fiscal revenue while enhancing efficiency and competitiveness of the South African economy, ensure sound management of government's financial assets and liabilities. We promote transparency and enforce financial management, effective management, and lastly, contribute to what employment creation. The operational and policy responsibilities, this basically gives you the structure of the Treasury. We have grouped this division. I think that the important distinction here is the last bullet, sub-bullet of the first bullet, which is the international and regional economic policy. This is a division that used to be part of the something that was called international financial relations, economic policy and international financial relations, but it is now a division in its name and rights, called the International and Regional Economic Policy. The rest of the divisions have remained the same. We're reporting here per program. Program 2 is public finance and budget management. In 2008, South Africa's budget documents were rated second highest in the world in terms of transparency by the Open Budget Initiatives. This is an organization based in Washington. We were beaten only by the French, but we now the second first budget documentation in the world. The program is also responsible for doing feasibilities of capital deeds, and these were assessed. You would recall that the infrastructure spending program lies at the core of our response to the global financial crisis. We also, in the estimate of national expenditure for 2009, included data on performance information and also tracked development assistance programs for each national department. We did prepare a revised public finance management bill, as we had promised. This was submitted to the previous cabinet in May 2008 with substantial changes to governance of public entities, but the bill was stood over and it would have to be considered by the new administration. We have also, in this INLIC program, evaluated budget submissions and policy proposals and expenditure plans of national departments and state enterprises. This is a very rigorous process. I think that by far the staff that occupies most of the time of this program has to do with this budget submission. Also, we monitor spending and service delivery trends. And lastly, that SA was provided with assistance in budgeting and planning for household surveys in the 2011 national census. Also, what we had to do in the terms of this program is responsible for providing advice and support to departments. I think key here was in support to the Department of Health on projects that amounted to a further 9 billion rand over the MTF. You would recall that health and education are the priorities of this this administration. We also provide from this program technical assistance to departments that have got projects to execute. We don't always go out offering this assistance. The approach is always that the departments that need the assistance approach us and say that we need this assistance. If we go to the department and say we are providing the assistance, normally it would be that the department is already in trouble. We offered project management advice to departments and host cities responsible for 2010. In addition to overseeing cost control and contract management there. We're not responsible for delivering the stadium. All that we are doing is to monitor that the grants that were there to finance the stadium, the conditions attached to the grant are adhered to, and also try and provide support with respect to contract management. Another important initiative of this program has to do with the Neighborhood Development Program, which has offered 86 grants to 51 municipalities with a value of 8.7 billion rand. This has been a new conditional grant, and it has now seriously taken off during the previous fiscal year and the current one. We have 32 full-time technical advisors in all provinces to assist with infrastructure planning and implementation. This is one of the most successful programs that we have, which we call the Infrastructure Development Improvement Program, IDIP. We have also had to develop, mainly at the request of various stakeholders, developed an internet-based training program in budget formulation for managers in the public service. The nice thing about the training program is that managers do not have to leave their desk to come for the training. They can do this training on the internet. It's an interactive website. We'd like to also coordinate from this program the implementation of the Municipal Finance Management Act in all municipalities and provided support to 27 municipalities that are the responsibilities of the National Treasury, and all the provincial treasuries so that they can do the rest with respect to the remainder of the municipalities. Also, new conditional grants were introduced to provinces, the overload control grant and the Sunny Park grant were also processed during the fiscal year. We reviewed the local government fiscal framework to provide greater financial support to poor and rural municipalities. And lastly, we had deployed 503 financial management interns to municipalities as part of the building of capacity in various municipalities. The next program is assets and liabilities. Key outputs or achievements here. We had Moody's Investor Services affirming South Africa's rating outlook as being a positive last year. We have also had three other rating agencies, though, that have revised their ratings outlook from stable to negative. This program here is responsible for managing all our relationships with the rating agencies. And they have to run all sorts of credit rating models to predict any future threat that they might perceive to the credit rating of the country. The division program is also responsible for financing the gross borrowing requirement of government. You would know that we ended up having to borrow more than what we had initially planned in the previous fiscal year, and we ended with a deficit of 3.8% instead of the initial one that we had provided for. And even this increased gross borrowing requirement was adequately financed through this program. We had also had to do a financial review. Members of this committee who were here last year would remember that we had to pass a special appropriation last year. It also involved a transfer of resources to the Pebble Belt Modular Reactor. One of the requirements from there was that we had to do a financial review of the PBMR. That review was conducted during the fiscal year, and it was completed. We also had to do a review of the development finance institutions. That report was done, and it was tabled to cabinet. We had to implement a new foreign debt module. This foreign debt module was delayed due to interface compatibilities with other parties. But we continued with the foreign debt module that we have. Even when this is completed, we would have to run both systems parallel to make sure that if there are any glitches, the glitches are eliminated during the fiscal year. One of the key outputs of this program is to monitor the composition of our debt portfolio. At the end of March this year, the debt composition was such that we had 29.7% in non-fixed rate debt versus 70.3% of fixed rate debt. The target was to have a split of 70-30, roughly, and you leave the discretion to the debt manager to shift around those proportions in order to generate any debt service cost savings that we might have. We have also, from this program, run a very vigorous investor relations program. We conduct both domestic and foreign non-deal roadshows with investors, and we also do reverse roadshows where investors, instead of us going out to them, they come into the treasury and we update them on recent policy developments. And lastly, one of the measures that we monitor is the split between foreign and domestic debt. We have set ourselves a limit that said that the proportion of foreign debt should not be more than 25% of our total debt portfolio. As at the end of March this year, it stood at 15.5%, well within the prudential requirements that we had actually set for ourselves. Program 5 has to do with financial management and system. We had to establish a grievance mechanism to deal with disputes and complaints arising from tender processes. For most of the big tender processes in government, there is always somebody who says we were robbed, and we had to establish something in the treasury so that if somebody says we were robbed, they have got somebody else who could listen to that and go through the process and ensure that government interests are actually protected, but also more importantly that the requirements with respect to the transparency of the supply chain processes are adhered to. We are also to move to transversal contracts. There are an additional 31 transversal contracts that were facilitated during the fiscal year. These are contracts that cut across government departments and sometimes also cut across the provinces, so that we could leverage government buying power, and that avoids every province or every department having to go out for a separate tender. We've got new supply chain management framework that we were ready to roll out, but it was delayed due to the postponement in consideration of the revised PFMA, because part of this thing related to changes in the basic legislation, being the primary legislation being the PFMA. We are also aligned preferential procurement with the aims of the BBBEX and the related strategy. This was not completed due to delay in considering the revised PFMA, but I'm pleased to announce that we had to do what we could do in terms of the regulations, and jointly with the Department of Trade and Industry, released for public comment new preferential procurement regulations that attempt to do the alignment with the codes in terms of the BBBEX. Draw out strategic outsourcing principles to 30% of national departments as planned. We have set ourselves that target, and that was achieved. And there was also a further rollout of the integrated financial management system, IFMS, that means it's IMFS. We also have a target of keeping 98% availability of financial management systems during working hours, and this too was achieved. Program 5 deals with financial accounting and reporting. This is primarily the office of the accountant general. We have to produce from this program consolidated financial statements of government. This will be the all the national departments, the provincial departments, and also more importantly, a consolidation of the public entities. From this program, it also developed and refined accounting policies to comply with standards issued by the Accounting Standards Board. The Accounting Standards Board issue this standard, and it takes time to roll out the standard across across government. It is this program that refined accounting policies of government and make sure that they comply with this standard. During the year, also a template was developed for municipalities for their annual financial statements, so that we could have a basis to compare across the municipalities. There was a booklet that was developed and published with respect to generally recognized accounting practices. It's something that is a guide for practitioners in the accounting sphere in various government departments. Also, more importantly for this program is that this program employs chartered accountants, and these fellows are not generally available. We had launched a program of training outside public practice, and in the previous fiscal year, there were 17 students who were participating in this program. These are young people who are participating on this program who, at the end of the training, would be able to sit for the board exam, and they would either be absorbed within the treasury or released to go and work in other government departments We had to develop during the year a capacity building model for finance personnel in both national and provincial departments, and this was rolled out, but we also did experience challenges in rolling out this capability model. The last core program of the treasury is the economic policy and international financial relations. This program develops South Africa's approach to various international bodies, but also more importantly develops the financial sector policy, taxation policy, and tracks trends in both global and domestic economy, and prepares analysis, policy advice, and forecast for the MCBPS and the budget. We have developed a principal component models here to assist the forecasting in the shorter term GDP growth outcomes. We have now got into the practice of briefing cabinet regularly about key developments in domestic economic trends. I've already talked about the policy focus for the MCBPS. We produce the economic assessments for various policy proposals. If there are policy proposals, for us to have a considered treasury view, it is this program that would run the models and do the analysis and come with policy advice on behalf of the treasury. We had heard during that particular year also analyze the economic impact of electricity tariff increases. We have to analyze the impact on inflation and the impact on economic growth. Last year when we did the strategic plan here, we did mention the issue about food and fuel prices. We were requested during that year to analyze what the causes of food price increases were and propose any policy responses for the thing, and that work took place in this program. There have been improvements to estimates of various tax elasticities. Basically here we have had to measure what the impact on tax revenue as a result of changes in underlying economic activity. We'll not bore you with the legislation. All of this legislation was tabled in this committee. The program also ran with the work of the International Growth and Advisory Panel, the so-called Harvard Group. Those recommendations were published during the course of last year, actually to be precise, were published in May, June last year. South Africa is a member of the G20, and it is this division that helps craft South Africa's positions in the G20, and we have contributed to this resolution that has been pronounced by the G20, and this has been specifically focused on the global financial regulations and the issues of financial stability. South Africa has also been co-chair with Australia in the G20 to promote governance reform in the IMF and the World Bank. A report was generated and was tabled to the head of the state summit in April this year in London. During the course of the year, considered the process to establish the cooperative banks development agencies and appointed a managing director there. There are other research staff such as the micro insurance discussion paper, the staff with respect to the review of the statute formula and developed a database for SACU payments. Lastly, we participated in meetings of the African Development Bank, the Southern African Development Community, the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, and we hold the secretariat of the Collaborative African Budget Reform Initiative. That concludes the core work of the Treasury. There is Program 7, which is basically a transfer program. I will not bore you with the details of that. We have included it here for the sake of completeness. Program 8, which is civil and military pensions and contributions to funds and other benefits. This is being administered from the government employee pension fund. They come and they do their own annual report. And again, I have included this thing for the sake of completeness. The last fiscal transfer program, it has to do with Program 9. This is the transfer to various agencies. It transfers over 20 billion rand to other institutions, including 10 billion rand to ESCOM to assist with sustainable development of infrastructure. The other transfers include a multitude of things, then SARS, FFC, FIC, GBSA. They all account separately to this committee. Lastly, Program 1, which is basically administration. This program is the support program of the Treasury. It provides support to all the other line function divisions of the Treasury. We have had to implement cost-cutting measures with respect to flight, accommodation, and catering. As you can see, besides the fact that we have got a team that has prepared for the budget policy statement, we also cut the size of our delegation to various places. You would also be aware we had requested various committees that ask the Treasury to appear before Parliament to ask us that we do it from 10 o'clock rather than 8 or 9 o'clock, because that means that we can fly in the morning. We do not have to sleep over the night before. We had the enhanced graduate development program. The acceptance rate reached 81% for the general internship and 70% for training outside public practice applicants there. And we also began to run coaching and mentoring programs for senior managers. We launched our own internal executive development program. Some of the training does take place inside of the Treasury, but most of the training is now co-sourced with universities to develop our own executives. Internally, we automated some of our processes about customized web publishing solutions. Most of the stuff that we do, including the annual report and the strategic plan, all of that stuff is being the layout is being done internally in the Treasury rather than being left to external players. Once we have done the layout, we then go out to print. Also from this program, we locate legal support. Every time a government department is sued, the litigants deem it proper that they also cite the National Treasury because they think you have the money, so you've got something to answer. So as a result of that, we find that we get involved in a lot of litigation, but we also oversee the legislation that comes through to Parliament. We also locate here our communication and marketing and media service, which is done on behalf of the department and the ministry. Our staff are important to us, and we have to create a safe working environment and optimal availability of facilities. We do that from here. And we also decided that we needed to continue to invest in developing the capacity of the staff of the Treasury to manage various organizational projects, and that is being done from here. And that is a quick snap, Mr. Chairperson, of a 258-page report.
Thank you, Director General. Let me just, I didn't inform the meeting before, that the Select Committee on Finance from the National Council of Provinces, were going to leave us run about lunchtime because it's a sitting of the NCOP. So don't be surprised if you see the House or committee members reducing in numbers. But we think we should continue to do our work unhindered. Any questions of clarity and comments? Baba, Makume.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is from the report. From the briefing now, I will just ask one question. Of the 25 municipalities which you are supporting, which of those 25 are having a problem of service level protests presently? Okay, from the report, there is also a high level of resignation of professionals and highly skilled people. Why it is that? For what occupational pain are people with disabilities are employed, and why it is that people with disability is categorized as occupational band. And then the last one, inconsistency of the usage of these terms, occupational band and occupational categories. Can we get clarity? I think that is all from my side. Thanks.
If you could assist us here, I don't know how you want to manage this. Do you want to go ask general questions, or should we be going program by program? Because then it might help us. I don't know.
Yeah, you can switch off your mic. This is the only presentation, isn't it? Yeah. I think it might be a little bit too constraining. It's a program by program. Let's allow members to enter after the presentation and have a free flow. Honorable Bidla, and you'll be followed by Luyenge.
Thank you, Chairperson. DJ, can I start from program one, not the other way around? Okay. Under program one, Chairperson, the parliamentary office was highlighted as one of the priority areas for the Treasury. But when I was reading the report, I didn't get a report as to how far has the Treasury gone in strengthening that office when it engages with Parliament. I'm not sure whether it was an omission or it was deliberate for Treasury not to report on that program. Under Program 3, Chairperson, on SOEs, in terms of the formulation of the SOE capital structure, the report indicates that the target was not met, but unfortunately, Chairperson, there is no explanation from the side of Treasury on what the percentage of the target was met and what were the reasons for not meeting the target. On Program 4, I just want to get the clarity on the time frame for submitting reports on SCM. monitoring to cabinet and SCOPA, since the target was to report on August 2008. And if you can, did you elaborate on progress relating to the implementation of the program projects in this sub program? On program 5, in your report, it is stated that a target was set to perform quality assessment reviews for 20 municipalities, but none conducted since none of the municipalities was ready for the review. I just want to get which municipalities are these and what was the selection criteria, and what were the challenges in respect of them not being ready for the review? Okay, we move to problem 6. Chairperson, this relates to SACU. I would like the DG and his team just to brief this committee on how will the interim IPAS impact on the economies of SACU member countries, and why South Africa has not signed the IPAS. I think it's problem 7. In terms of the infrastructure grant to provinces, how long will it take to align the IDIP toolkit to the hospital revitalization program in the Department of Health, and how long will it take for Public Works to align the IDIP toolkit to the government-wide immovable asset management policy and legislation? On Program 8, Chairperson, in terms of the strategic plan of the Treasury, the target relating to the processing of applications by 21st March 2008 was not achieved. Can we get explanation from the Treasury in relation to the specific gaps identified and its financial significance in the overall administration of military pensions? Can I stop there, Chairperson, and hoping that you will give me another chance to finish my question?
My first question relates to the municipal infrastructure grants that are issued to municipalities. Is there any ring fencing that is being done to ensure that the intention of this funding is adhered to by municipalities? And also, is there any contemplation to establish a separate funding for sport facility development from this MIG as of now? I'm asking this question, Chairperson, because there is a notion that says there be an establishment of that particular funding to address the infrastructural decay in terms of sports facilities in the country. Then the other issue, Chair, is around the revenue collection. Is the department not contemplating to assist in the revenue collection strategy of municipalities, as by the look of things, they rely only on these grants that are coming from national, and in the process they are using them, not necessarily for development initiatives, but they go to employees 80 to 85% in certain municipalities. They use this gas. Then the other issue, Chair, is around the usage of consultancy by the department. What level or which programs are being assisted most by the usage of consultancy, and the level of cost, is it cost effective to either make use of consultants in the department? Then lastly, the issue of perpetual understanding by other departments. What sanctions does the department intend to employ on issues that relate to understanding? Because during this recession period, you'll find that there is understanding that is envisaged by other departments. And also, Chair, the treasurer in his policy speech indicated that there is no way that service delivery can be suspended because of the economic recession. But the department would rather look for borrowing, opt for borrowing. So at what stage is that intervention being employed? Is it going maybe to be considered for the next financial year or the year under review? Yeah, those are the questions, sir.
Thank you. I think we'll allow you to respond.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, I will pick up the easier ones. And the more difficult ones, I will leave them to the Deputy Minister in the team. I will pick up without saying which one I respond to. I'll leave the certain ones for my team. Zarina, you will answer for yourself what progress you are making with the parliamentary team. So you better prepare yourself. I mean, I thought that you have got all this capacity. I didn't hear you cry saying you want more, but we have that. So that's so that these fellows can prepare them themselves. Henry must answer the municipal infrastructure grant and the sports facilities thing. Let me start with the questions raised by the last speaker, the Honorable Zikile. Revenue collection strategies of the municipalities. You have to distinguish between two types of municipalities. There are municipalities with a tax base. And actually, if you take the metros, they would account for up to 85% of the spending of the of the municipalities. So they have a tax base. So the extent that they can't collect some of those things, it will most of the time have to do with their billing and billing approach. But they have got a base. In terms of the law, they are obliged to have certain control mechanisms with respect to their revenue and so forth. So that is one set of issues. You would find that the metros predominantly rely on their own revenue for funding. When you go to the on an extreme, you have smaller rural municipalities which have got no tax base. There are complications there. Yesterday we were in the this meeting which the president was having with the mayors, and it becomes very clear that in many of the rural municipalities where you do not have title, so most impossible to have assessment rates for property. People do not own that property. So the challenge then of the funding of rural municipality is going to have to be dealt with differently, because they do not have the tax base that the bigger municipalities are having. So that might entail a reconfiguration of local government, but that is the subject for another matter. The general understands by other government departments, and the question is what we do about it. But if you understand, we will take the money away. Okay? You do not spend the money, we take it away, it goes back into the national revenue fund, so you do not have access to it anymore. But as it should happen, every department will try and convince you why actually they must keep the money, because the money is committed. So if the money is already committed, you will see it coming out through rollovers and so forth. But otherwise, the money will then revert back to the National Revenue Fund. The problem, though, is that when money is not spent in a service delivery department, it's the first time that something else didn't take place. That something else, it means that there is a citizen or citizens out there who were supposed to receive a service and didn't receive the service. We see it when we see the underspending. Apart from that, I think that the question is, what can we do? Maybe I would like to throw that question and say that, well, the relevant portfolio committee should call that department and say that you have not spent the money that you had been allocated with respect to the following program. That means that service delivery didn't take place. Why? That is the beauty of the Public Finance Management Act, because then the accounting officers must come and answer for themselves. But the solution that we have, if the money is not spent, is that it reverts back to the National Revenue Fund, and we can then deploy that differently. You also asked the question about Gordon, saying that the minister had said that we had decided to protect the spending that is in the baseline rather than cuts. And the reason is not hard to find, that our response to the global crisis and our own recession was that you would like to protect the services that the South African public receives. But if you protect those services and you continue to roll out those services in an environment where tax collection is down, as you had heard from the South African Revenue Services, what that would entail is that you are having a shortfall. That shortfall you are going to have to borrow. And that is why you saw an increase in the gross borrowing requirements that we had had to finance. It happened because the alternative for us was that we would have had to cut on expenditure. At the time of the budget, we were destined to borrow 15.7 billion rand. By the end of the fiscal year, then we ended up having to borrow 50.9 billion rand, as I had reflected. So that is what this meant. There were a series of other questions that had to do with Program 1, which had to do with dealing with the people with disabilities, occupational bans, and so forth. Marion Mbina will deal with those questions. There was a question about which municipalities that we had supported had service delivery process do not have those figures. Our support to the municipalities has to do with the implementation of the Municipal Finance Management Act rather than with the actual delivery of the services that must be rendered by the municipalities. Uh, And why don't you take your questions so that I can cock a moya a little bit. Freeman, you will deal with the supply chain management report and the progress. They said progress with other sub-programs. Only other sub-program there is integrated financial management system with respect to program 4. You will also be very busy with your quality assessment reviews and of the municipalities and the selection criteria that you had used. So if we could deal the deputy minister is reminding me that Ismail Momonia thinks that he is getting away scot-free. There is the staff of SACU and the EPAs that you must deal with. And with the alignment of the ID toolkit and the hospital revitalization, if you could deal with that. Oh, Marian, you've got another a bonus. Program 8, the processing of applications that was currently not met. Who's ready?
Sure, DG. There were several questions on municipal finance and monitoring municipalities. This has been a big focus area for the last two or three years, and the monitoring of municipal financial information is now on a much sounder footing than it was 2 years ago. The annual report indicates that since 2006-07, the number of municipalities that comply with our financial reporting requirements has increased from just 43 to 280 plus. Essentially, all municipalities are now in the system. There's still some improvements in the quality of information certainly to sort out, but there is now a comprehensive financial flow of financial information on municipalities. And in terms of Section 71 of the legislation, that is published and that information is available. That means that the review of local government budgets and expenditure, which was published last year, is much more detailed, much more comprehensive, and contains much more information on municipal infrastructure spending, service delivery, and also revenue. There will not be a similar publication this year. This year the publication is on provincial budgets and expenditure, and I think the expectation is there will again be a review of municipal finances and development issues next year. But that's where to go if I can suggest for detailed information. If you're wanting to know which municipalities are in particular difficulties, that review published last year is the best source of information. And then on the Treasury website there is also updated information on each municipality published every quarter. On the specific questions, review of the municipal infrastructure grant, that grant is the responsibility of the Department of Corporate Government and Traditional Affairs, not Treasury, so the main monitoring is done by that department. But the reporting on conditional grants in terms of the Division of Revenue Act is regulated by the Treasury, and so in those quarterly reports on municipal accounts, there are also reports on municipal infrastructure grant spending. I think it's probably true to say, DG, that we recognise that that the specifics of spending on individual projects funded through the Municipal Infrastructure Grant Program are not yet satisfactorily monitored, and so there is still some work to do in strengthening and the comprehensiveness of that monitoring, and we will be working with the Department of CGTA on that. And there was also a question on revenue collection. Yes, revenue collection is also a focus of our training programs and our assistance to municipalities. I don't have those details in front of you, but certainly our training programs for municipalities have also considerably stepped up over the last few years. This is a long-term project. We're going to be doing it for a long time to come still. That capacity building is by no means something that can be undertaken as a short-term exercise. And I think really the same point needs to be made about the alignment of the IDIP toolkit. The IDIP program focuses on particular departments each year. The focus does shift from year to year, There has been a particular effort done in several provinces to strengthen management of health sector maintenance and building projects, and so there's been some work done in respect of alignment with the hospital revitalization program. Your question was, when will that alignment be completed? I think the answer is, it's not. There isn't really a strict cutoff in that sort of work. We may well complete a review and adapt the toolkits, but we shouldn't think that will end. The problem then comes to an end. We would still be ready if difficulties arise in particular provinces or particular hospital projects to adapt the documentation and provide assistance if necessary. There was also the question on what sanctions National Treasury employs in relation to underspending. I think we have to be careful about distinguishing between underspending that is a service delivery problem and underspending that is a consequence perhaps of savings being achieved or more efficient service delivery. Not all underspending is a bad thing. It does depend on what kind of project, what kind of activity one is talking about. In general, in national departments, spending is, in almost all departments, pretty much in line with budgets now. There are not big underspending problems in national programs. And really, we're dealing more often with problems of risks of overspending than of underspending at present. But our budget analysts who liaise with or are in communication with the chief financial officers of national departments, and similarly in our intergovernmental relations team who are in communication with provincial treasuries, monitor those spending numbers monthly. We take different approaches to different departments. It depends on relationships. But where a problem appears to be emerging, spending is either diverging by looking as though it may overspend or underspend, we will write to a department or communicate with the CFO's office to try to get an understanding of reasons for that. And those reasons then, or explanations, or perhaps action that needs to be taken, will then be discussed with departments and there is also on a quarterly basis a sort of summary of trends that is communicated in the publications on overall national spending and provincial spending that are communicated, that are published by the Treasury and communicated to Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think my response could be an easy one because the responsibility for the EPAs is with the Department of Trade and Industry. Obviously, I think the kind of issues they've had is that the SAARCU region has its own external tariff. In having this new, if this agreement were to go through, it will in effect change the external tariffs of countries that signed compared to South Africa. So in effect you would have countries like Botswana and Lesotho and Swaziland having a different external tariff. So almost by definition there would be no SAARCU because the external tariffs will be different. So I think on the one hand, I think the underlying reasons we have to refer you to Department of Trade and Industry with regard to their specific problems. But the impact of the EPA going through and having different tariffs, as I said, will have quite strong consequences or serious consequences for the future of SAARCU if it were to go through in that form. Obviously, I think government is committed to regional integration and depending on the outcome of the EPA, I mean, we'll look at how we can still take forward regional integration. In the event that, and I'm not saying we'll go that way, but in the event that the SAARCU agreement doesn't remain, then the question for many of the neighboring countries is that they are quite dependent on revenue, especially from customs, and those revenues will fall if there weren't to be a customs union. So the consequences can are potentially far-reaching, but I have to refer you to the TGI in terms of where they stand with the EPA. Thanks.
I will take the three questions that DG referred to me, the FCM report. Now, there's a bit of background in that last year was the first year that we were using the financial management capability maturity model to assess the various activities, financial management activities that take place in departments, which is largely a self-assessment tool. And the outcome of that in the first implementation of that exercise proved to be problematic in that a lot of the departments rated themselves very, very well in terms of how they're doing this, which was not a reflection of the truth. So it would not have been appropriate to take that report and bring it to Cabinet or Parliament in that form. So we needed to go through that report in detail and do a detailed analysis for each of the departments. That exercise has been done and concluded and updated to the latest information, and the report is available and will be submitted in due course, covering up until the current financial year. The other projects that Program 4 is dealing with, except for those projects that are dependent on the review of the PFMA, all of those projects are underway and they are progressing quite well. Some of them in the initial stages, particularly those that relate to the IFMS, in the initial stages, because of the amounts of money involved and with the complaints the DG talked about, people saying they were robbed and so on, you have to deal with those, get those sorted out, and then start the process of implementation. The large bulk of those projects have been resolved, and the implementation process is underway. The question on quality assurance reviews for municipalities, basically the criteria is a simple one. All of the internal audit activities in the country operate based on an international best practice that requires that every 5 years internal audit activity needs to be reviewed for its effectiveness and so on. So basically that is the criteria. Internal audit should have been in existence for at least 5 years, and then if it has been in existence for 5 years, then you come and do the review. Most of the municipalities that would have been reviewed last year, they had not had the internal audit activity for 5 years, and therefore it would have been premature to review those municipalities. But as soon as they get to that, they then get reviewed. It would be presumptuous to talk of the challenges, because essentially here it's just a question of them not being in existence for that period of time. But notably, in the internal audit environment, you do not have a lot of people in this country. The membership of the IAA is just over 6,000 members, and the highest qualification in the world, CIA, you just have over 1,000 in the country at the moment. And therefore, you don't have a lot of internal auditors. And even those in those small numbers aren't necessarily displaying qualities that are adding value to their entities necessarily. And therefore, those will be the challenges that you will face in the quality assurance reviews that we've done already in the government departments. That's the challenge that you pick up largely. DG, I don't know whether you're going to address the question of consultants in departments. To identify which projects, which programs are normally dealt with through consultants would be difficult, because it varies from department to department. Consultants can be used for any of the programs that the department deals with. I think the key question is whether government is getting value for money in this use of consultants. There are instances where there's value for money. You can identify those, but there are also instances where there isn't value for money. And the where there's a program in a department that has been outstanding for a number of years. You can ask a simple question, who is delivering this project for you? You will find that there are consultants that are doing that, and they are being paid, and nothing is coming forward. So it varies from department to department. There are departments that are deriving value, and there are departments that aren't deriving value. The challenge is in managing this thing strictly, which is the responsibility of the accounting officers concerned in those departments. To the extent that there are supply chain violations, then maybe there would be things that we'll deal with from our side. I think that deals with the questions I had to deal with.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll start first by saying to the Honourable Member, page 214 to 41, in terms of occupational band and occupational categories, that is deliberate from the Employment Equity Act. They need those things to be differentiated so that they can address different audiences and different policymakers. The key thing is you have to account for every employee in both areas. If you look at page 240 and page 241. In terms of the reasons for the professional leaving, I think first let me start by saying I've actually had a net gain because we employed 227 people during the financial year under discussion, and we lost 104 people. But people when they go to the treasury, they get exposure and they get highly marketable. They also have ambitions. They want to move on very fast. In some cases, those posts that they would like to move to inside the treasury are already having incumbents. And I don't think it's a bad thing that we lose the people in some instances. Some of them are not good performers. Some of them, most of them, will move to other departments, in which case we feel that they've been trained well to examine to those particular departments. The other question that came my way was the Program 8 question. Now, Program 8 is often administered on behalf of the Treasury by the GEPF. Now, I'd have to tread on the turf of somebody else of what the challenges are, but I'm cautious to say first the structure of the whole, or in fact, the establishment of the GEPF was increased quite substantially due to staffing problems and capacity issues. And now we know that recruiting is not very easy. They haven't had a very good time with the recruitment of the people that we thought would be military pensions. From our perspective, military pensions was not a big issue. Secondly, I think from another perspective, where we try to recruit, there is no space to put those people. So finding additional office space has been a challenge, and it's something that's being addressed so that they can recruit the numbers of people that they require. Is there any other question from my side? Disabilities, they are between salary level 6 and salary level 12. There's one who's a salary level 11, who's a technician, and the others are basically between salary level 6 and salary level 11. Yeah, I have a chief director. He's telling me, I have a chief director who refuses to be classified as disabled, so I can't do anything.
He refuses to be classified as disabled because he says that all that he needs to work in the treasury is his brain, and he has it. That brain is functioning. He should not be classified as disabled. So we have to respect his wish. I must also say on this, the people... we have also seen the recession is also leading to very interesting trends. We have also seen people returning to the treasury over the past 2 years. People who you used to employ, the strange thing is that there is one that we would re-employ who left less than 14 months ago. And the reason is a very straightforward one. The counseling I give the people who leave the treasury is that the world is very rough out there. If you don't make it out there, don't be ashamed and come back to the treasury and say that I thought the grass was greener the other side, but it is not as green as I thought. We will welcome you back in the treasury, and we have welcomed a couple of those back. But we must not be deceived. The Treasury employs highly professional people The panels are very, very competent. They could go and earn a lot of money elsewhere. They have decided to stay. Their commitment is something that, as the management of the Treasury, we do not take for granted. And they have served the Treasury selflessly. And there is one thing that always drives them. I mean, as we were coming here, the question that was coming says, yes, you're going to appear in the Punjab. I'm sure you can answer that question. Why don't you just leave us behind because we have got the budget policy statement to deliver? It must be tabled in Parliament on Tuesday. There are no ifs or buts. Come Tuesday, when Parliament comes in, they are going to have that budget policy statement. And they know. If the budget policy statement is there on Tuesday, you will probably not see me here that Tuesday. I will probably be walking back somewhere in the street. So it's the kind of passion that people are driven by that they continue to serve in the Treasury. It's a passion to serve the country. And as I said, it is a commitment that as management of the Treasury, we do not take for granted. And I hope that Parliament also does not take it for granted.
Very quickly, DG, there was a question on municipal sports facilities, and that is, of course, an area we would like to see more spending on. There is not a specific grant program to municipalities for sports facilities. There is a grant program that the Department of Sport and Recreation administers for supporting participation in sport that goes to provinces, and provincial departments are then responsible for distributing that money. It is 402 million rand this year. Of course, that pales into insignificance alongside what we are spending on 10 stadiums for next year. And once those stadium programs are out of the way, then I think there may be a bit of space to step up spending on sports facilities more generally. But the Municipal Infrastructure Grant Program is also intended to cover facilities of that kind, and we perhaps need to do a bit of work in teasing out exactly how much is going into sports facilities from that program. There is also funding that goes to sports facilities, of course, from the lotteries program. And so it's not just the main budget that is a source of funding here.
Sarina, you must talk about the parliamentary office. The last question that I have to deal with has to do with the capital structure project and the program that was not met. So the project that we decided we wanted to do. To do internally. It involved having to review the capital structure of every state-owned enterprise and some of the key public entities and say that what is the appropriate level of debt that they could carry on their books, and if they are generating profits, what sort of dividends should they be declaring to the National Revenue Fund. Whilst we were going through executing that program, a number of SOEs got themselves into embarrassing situations. And we had to speed up that process. That entailed us having to utilize outside capacity to drive this project. We hit a snag because part of the condition of the bid was that if you are going to do this work for the Treasury, you should not be doing work for any of the state-owned enterprises. And as it turned out, everybody was doing some form of work or the other for state-owned enterprises. So the option then that we were left with was to then go outside the country. It is that led to the delay. The report deals with the period up to the 31st of March. As we stand now, the project is ready. It was divided into two phases. we had put already a financial model for each one of the state-owned enterprises, and we tried to project them forward so that we can assess what kind of risks we would face as the treasury. The second phase of the project would involve us engaging with particular line function to say that this is what we see with respect to these state-owned enterprises. Let me give you an example that there are state-owned enterprises which have been profitable over the years and are sitting on significant cash reserves. When you ask them that they must declare the dividends, like all good managers, they will tell you that they have got use for the cash. Okay? So they think of projects that they must do or execute with the cash. For us to get access to that cash, you need the participation of the line function department. But you can't just go around and say, there is cash, bring it. It has to be based on the modeling that we had actually done. So the next few months are going to be very interesting as we engage those that are having cash on their balance sheet. I must say, they are not that many. You are aware of those that are constantly knocking on our doors, asking for capital injections, and some who had asked for money before, and we said no, and they think we owe them that money. What we are using these financial models for is to then say to them, no, we don't think that you need a capital injection. Go and cut your expenses. Do that. We want a turnaround strategy and so forth. Yes, and some which didn't listen, we ended up sending some bad guys from the treasury to go and run them. The parliamentary office, none of my parliamentary officers here do not want to answer this question, but they had been well resourced for the purposes of what we had. The reason why we wanted to beat up the parliamentary office and we didn't take that step was that the reason we wanted to beat it up was because of the procedure to amend money bills. But since this didn't kick in last year, there was no reason why we had to beat that up last year. It's something that we will then now consider now that Parliament has the power to amend money bills. It would entail serious interaction between the Treasury and Parliament. And hopefully, Chair, we might end up having to invest in some video conferencing facilities, because otherwise I might end up having to be your guest more frequently than you would like me to be. Any other things? No? Okay. Good. Any other follow-up questions or comments? Honorable Mutimele?
A comment.
All right. Yeah. You know, on program 2, I think page 4 of the slide, in terms of the presentation, is talking about a revised public finance management bill, which was submitted to in May 2008. That requires substantial changes to the governance of public entities. Now, I just wanted to check how far are these proposals. The second issue, or set of issues that I thought we should look into, is the ratings, the Moody ratings. You said three other ratings. That's page 8, program 3, asset and liabilities management. Three other rating agencies revised their ratings outlook from stable to negative. That's in terms of how South Africa has been perceived out there.
do we have any specific reasons that has been advanced for this negative outlook, and what has this done to our ability to attract foreign and direct investment into the country? Even under this global financial crisis, I do believe that some sort of investments are still taking place everywhere in the world. There's a related question, but I should have asked this question earlier on when SARS was here. You know, they spoke about, is it 3 billion rand of the money that is outside, the cash in transit, you know, if one was to simplify it, the money that they grab, deposit, it's about 3 billion rand. That's a lot of money. But it just indicates the extent to which resources are available, but outside the system. Probably this is what Fidel Castro would have termed a global casino. Trillions of US dollars that are floating all over the world, undermining the independence of government and the ability of government to deal with issues of poverty and related matters. Now, in terms of our policy gaps, I know Treasury may not be direct, but you have a way in engaging to engage with these things. The last point from my side is going to be on the alignment of provincial procurement with the aims of the BBBE Act and related strategy not completed due to, okay, fine. Up to that end. We have the financial services charter in this country. I don't think there is much work that is being done in that area in terms of transformation. The issues of equity and codes and quotas, I can't get it. Is somewhere sizzling, somewhere in the air. It might be between the trade and industry. But I thought I should raise this matter and find out exactly what are we doing. I've had interaction with the financial services board, lots of gaps in there. Interactions with SAIA itself, lots of gaps in there. And there seems to be no specific attention in those areas, in terms of just dealing with transformational issues. And transformation is not just about equity and so on and so forth. It's about aligning their programs with the developmental agenda of the state. And I don't think we are, in terms of our programs, we're also beginning to look into those areas. So I thought I should just raise this one or two issues. Which may not be directly linked to your annual report, but I think they are part of the central theme of what we do. The redesigned special pension application forms can I just have more information around this matter? I know you've spoken about this matter now, but I just want to get it in terms of this redesigned form. What is it actually aimed at? You know, aim and strategic focus, which is page one, where we draw our mandate, or where you draw your mandate as National Treasury, in terms of the Constitution and also the Public Finance Management Act. I hope this matter will soon be settled, because there is also an understanding that is emerging from another line department, economic development, about this particular matter of macroeconomic issues. I know the question stays at the moment. I just want to get the comment of the Deputy Minister and the Treasurer and the Director General on this matter. So you've asked a number of questions, but this is the last one that you raised. What we are reporting on here is directly in line with the existing legislation. And as you might have heard, that with the establishment of the new departments, some departments have not finalized the defining of their mandate. Therefore, it is a bit difficult for now to change anything. At the moment, we report directly in line with the mandate given to us by both the Constitution and the Public Finance Management Act. I think, Chairperson, that is adequate to address your question. And Marlon is going to explain to you, but I think basically with regard to the redesigned special pensions form, it was an attempt to simplify the form in order to assist people make applications for the special pensions. Right. Unless Marion wanted to actually talk to the special features of the form that were actually simplified. Marion.
Yes, thank you, Chair. It was to simplify the form because we found it was a bit cumbersome for some of the people to actually fill it in. Also, there were amendments that were not there in the previous act, like the spouse's pensions and the funeral benefits for those who actually were the spouses themselves. So it was to include those things as well, mainly.
Yeah. I think the response of the Deputy Minister on the mandate of the Treasury covers the matter adequately. There is a question about the financial sector charter and the transformation there. Chair, I get animated when I talk about this, so I would rather leave it to Momo.
That's assuming that I don't get animated by it. Chair, I think that, the tragedy in this whole situation is that the financial sector charter actually has very high transformation targets, and there's scope within the current agreement to also do a review and to review those and align them with any new priorities that government may have from the perspective of a more developmental agenda. But if you look at the transformation objectives, I mean, they cover access to bank accounts, they cover funding of infrastructure, funding of PE, funding of small businesses, a whole gamut of issues. The charter's been stuck the last 2 years because there's been a particular interpretation from some of the stakeholders that the codes of good practice now trump the financial sector charter. Now, that's not strictly correct because the codes allow for the charter to bypass the codes if it's gazetted as a sector charter. This has not happened because of the disagreement within the council. And so as a result, in effect, the codes apply over it, and there's no doubt that the issue is close to coming to the death of the financial sector charter unless there's an intervention pretty soon to save it. And if the FSC charter doesn't survive, the problem is that the codes of good practice will apply. And that means that all the transformation and access obligations will in effect either fall away or are limited to the 5% residual that you have within the codes. So from being something close to 40%, it's going to be brought down to within, you know, only a 5% priority. So, you know, perhaps, Jay, it may not be a bad idea if you, I mean, Parliament used to, in previous committees, used to ask the, get reports from the FSC, because it really was, I don't know if there's any other charters, but it was one of the charters that reported annually on progress made. I think last year, because of the elections and the pressures on Parliament, this was not done, and they were not called. But the committee used to ask all the players to come and report on their progress made. So I think certainly ministers of our minister and the Minister of Trade and Industry are quite committed, and even last night the Deputy Minister talked about what steps they can take to meet with the stakeholders to try and resolve some of the issues and salvage the charter. And I think many of us would like it to be salvaged because the transformation and access targets actually go a long way and make this a pretty unique charter. And it would be a real pity if we lost those objectives and stop applying pressure on financial sector institutions to do more than what they can if they were just left at the obligations around the code. They would, many of the participants think that they are meeting some of those targets quite easily. So this, the FSC actually stretches institutions to go much further than the codes. And I think in all the noise, that has perhaps been lost. Because of perhaps relatively small differences, the big picture has been lost here among some of the stakeholders, I would think.
Thanks, Chair. It's one issue. I see under Table 6.1, page 240. Chairperson, one of the goals of this government is that of creating a non-racial society. And we do that amongst other things by employing the employment equity. But I see there under Clark's chairperson, I think there's a problem there. I don't know what is the cause. Maybe Treasury can help us to understand. Under White, there is none that is employed in the position of clerks. I don't know whether it's the shortage of the skill in that group or there are other reasons that cause this. I just wanted to get clarity, Chair, and how are they intending to address that issue?
I just wanted to remind the team of the Deputy Minister that as they respond to that question, there were either there were still one or two questions from the previous. Lillian, it's a long way. The question used to be the other way around too, but. The questions, Chair, that you asked with respect to the Public Finance Management Bill and the changes to the entities. The bottom line of that was that what we intended to do to tighten the oversight on the public entities, we were asked that that should be left out now. So the changes were done, but then kept everything with respect to public entities as it exists in the current Public Finance Management Act. We would revise the process and see what the new administration, in which direction the new administration would like to go. With respect to the ratings, the moment the ratings, again we were reporting about last year, there was this frenzy last year that when a rating agency downgraded, all the others were following. There was also a frenzy that when this rating agency downgraded, they downgraded as it was almost like a herd mentality. So on the day, for example, that Fitch revised our outlook, they revised it alongside 17 other countries. Standard & Poor's did almost something similar, and so was the RNI of Japan. They also did something along those lines. It was a knee-jerk reaction that said that emerging markets or developing countries as a block would struggle to come through the global financial crisis. But as it turns out, it looks like it's the developed countries that are struggling to come through that a crisis. It was some of the reasons cited by both Fitch and S&P at the time was that they thought that we would not be able to fund our current account deficit, two, that with revenue declining we will not be able to raise the money. As fate would have it, not only have we been able to finance the current account deficit then when it was at 7-point-some-odd percent, that actually the figure of the first half of this year shows that the current account deficit had declined. Not only has it declined, we saw a resumption of capital flows to South Africa this year. The second issue that was raised was that in the context where you are having a global slowdown, the tendency would be on policymakers to give up prudent policies. That did not happen here. The last point that I would have to make with respect to this is that during the discussions in the G20, there was a call for countries to members of the G20 to put a stimulus packages on the table equivalent to 2% of GDP in order to be able to weather the crisis. South Africa did that. And if you took into account the investment activities of the state-owned enterprises, our stimulus was then closer to 5% than it was to 2%. So we had done more than our fair share in making sure that we positioned the South African economy to come to weather the crisis. If you looked at that, you would say that the rating agencies that put us on review got it wrong. One of them will be visiting the country soon, and they would have to update their views with respect to South Africa. And hopefully we will get them to see things the way they are supposed to be seen. In the case of Moody's, I must say, not only did they affirm the positive outlook that they had for South Africa, they actually upgraded our foreign currency rating. You would remember at the time we said that South Africa had entered the A-League of the investment grade because we moved from being a Baa1 rated country to being an A3 rated country. Yes, there was an adjustment from our domestic currency rating, which was used to be ranked A2 and was now ranked A3. It was a technical adjustment because the view of Moody's was that they wanted to unify the ratings, since South Africa now is irrelevant whether South Africa is raising money from international capital markets or from domestic capital markets. The investors are facing the same risk, and since they are facing the same risk, you could as well unify the credit. What has been the impact on FDI? Difficult to tell. FDI in South Africa is erratic and it's lumpy. You have one big deal, and then there is a lull, and there is another big deal, and there is a lull. But what we have seen from inflows into the domestic bond markets, which are the investors who watch the ratings closely, is that we have seen a resumption of inflows into the South African bond market. Part of it has been that interest rate differentials between us and the developed countries are actually so attractive. So money does come through into the domestic market, and you see it manifesting itself in various other indicators. There is the issue about the PPP FA. We have mentioned the fact that there are draft regulations released for public comment, so they are there. I think that gives Marion yes, can you deal with the she's talking about to the clerk.
Thank you, Chair. Actually, Chair, from clerks downwards, we don't have any white people employed. And I think in pursuit of a fair representation in terms of race distribution, what we ask for is basically your first candidate should be female and black, and then we move on. And then if you have then an issue of a scarce skill, you most likely employ a qualified white person where there is no black skill available. And at a historical level downwards, there's more black people than white people, and naturally one would expect that there will be more black people employed at those levels. And unfortunately, we've lost the white people that we inherited through natural attrition.
Minister, you are welcome. The Deputy Minister says he wanted to introduce you, but this is my meeting, you see. I'm just joking. Honorable Minister, we welcome you into the meeting. I must say we are almost towards the end of the second presentation, which you were supposed to have handled personally. That was your wish. But when I was told this morning, I actually said this is an overambitious program. And the minister should have confidence in the team that he has, because very capable of actually handling issues. And I must say, on behalf of your team, that they've handled issues very well in your absence. But since you are here, we can't say what you wanted to say to the comments you should not say. You have that platform to can say that, and obviously we'll love also to be briefed a little bit in terms of this annual report, how you see them as the committee, in short.
Donald, how did you know he was coming back?
Chair, you're very kind, and thank you very much. The cabinet meeting just finished about 5 minutes or 10 minutes ago, so my apologies. I was hoping that both the Deputy Minister and I will be available for the first part with SARS and for the second part with Treasury. I really don't want to interrupt the process. We have discussed as a team what we needed to share. Clearly, Treasury has an excellent record in terms of its delivery and will hopefully continue to do so, even under the difficult circumstances we find ourselves in. But also the MTBPS is a few days away, so we don't want to say too much. The members of the press would love it if we did. But we've got to exercise the appropriate discipline. So thank you very much for the opportunity, Chair.
Honourable members, do you still have any other last matter to raise? If not, do you Honourable? Yeah, but just in summarizing, we really want to say we think you came here well prepared, and we must give credit where it is due. You came here well prepared. You make things much more simpler for us as parliamentarians to understand and also to can ask pertinent questions so that we can execute our mandate as public representatives on behalf of the public that has elected us. The second issue that I think has cropped out from this discussion, it does pose a challenge to us as parliamentarians, particularly this committee, in terms of other institutions that we need to take direct interest in the unfolding processes in there, particularly the Financial Services Charter. We might need to get some more information from you through my office, just to make sure that nothing falls in between the cracks. If from government policies are driven in some way, we face the possibility of a death of that initiative. It cannot be when both the executive is functional and parliament is active. We should find a mechanism to deal with those issues. We are looking forward to put together a report in terms of this annual report presentation today, and also as a committee, Minister would also be looking very closely to the presentation that we are going to make next week. And let me take this opportunity to inform honourable members that there's going to be a lock-up session on Tuesday. I think it's from 10 o'clock. Yeah, from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock. If you've got no intention of staying for that time, don't come and don't take the document. But all of us are expected to be in that lock-up session, both Standing Committee on Finance, Appropriations, and the Select Committee in the NCOP. I thought this was just an announcement. We had scheduled to proceed with our meeting up to 3 o'clock, but because we are very efficient and we came well prepared, we have finished 30 minutes before. And we should appreciate that so that we don't actually whip ourselves with salted whips even when it is not necessary. I know we want to engage and do much more, but we may actually impact negatively on the good work that we've done so far, both as the committee and yourself. And thank you very much.